The information in this skill is provided for informational and educational purposes only. Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Multiple Sclerosis Flash Briefings.
Hello, I'm Price Wooldridge, and you're listening to Multiple Sclerosis News Today's audio news. These are today's news highlights curated by our editorial staff. Visit our website at multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com for more relevant news and patient perspectives. Early factors identified that predict health-related quality of life. Researchers have identified early factors that can affect the trajectory of a patient's long-term health-related quality of life, or HRQOL, after a multiple sclerosis diagnosis. These factors include older age, worse physical impairment, and more severe fatigue at diagnosis, which were predictive of worse long-term physical HRQOL. In addition, low annual incomes at or below $50,000 and a lack of post-secondary education were linked to consistently low mental HRQOL. There are early risk factors for those who will end up in the groups with the worst health-related quality of life that are easily identifiable by doctors and other health professionals. Julia O'Mahony, Ph.D., a postdoctoral researcher at the Health Sciences Center, Winnipeg, in Winnipeg, Canada, and the study's first author, said in a press release, "This could provide an opportunity for early interventions that could help people with MS live better lives," O'Mahony added. The study, Physical and Mental Health-Related Quality of Life Trajectories Among People with Multiple Sclerosis, was published in the journal Neurology. What is health-related quality of life? HRQOL measurements assess the impact of health on a person's physical and mental well-being. People with multiple sclerosis report a lower quality of life when compared to people without the disease, and even those with other chronic conditions, O'Mahony said. However, most studies evaluating HRQOL have been cross-sectional, meaning they took a snapshot at a given time. As such, the understanding of how HRQOL changes over time and what factors might contribute to its different trajectories is lacking. There are several factors that may play a role. Our research sought to identify such factors so they can be addressed early in the course of the disease, O'Mahony said. The study involved 4,888 adults with confirmed MS, 81% women, who participated in the North American Research Committee on MS registry from 2004 to 2020. Eligible participants lived in the U.S., had enrolled in the registry within 3 years of diagnosis, and had completed an HRQOL questionnaire at least 3 times. In total, 57,564 questionnaires were completed between 1 and 27 years after MS diagnosis, with an average of 12 questionnaires per participant. HRQOL was evaluated with the RAND 12, which generates 2 aggregate scores, one summarizing physical HRQOL and one encompassing mental HRQOL. The team identified 5 distinct physical HRQOL trajectories over time. The first, occurring in 26.4% of patients, included people with consistently low physical HRQOL, while the second group, 29.2%, had consistently moderately low HRQOL. Another 13.4% had moderate to low physical life quality in the first 10 years, which improved to normal thereafter. Others, 17.1%, experienced an early decline in the first 8 years after diagnosis, which increased to moderate or normal after that. The last group included 13.9% of participants who had persistently normal physical HRQOL for the first 20 years, followed by a decline. When evaluating predictors of low physical HRQOL, the researchers found that patients who were older at diagnosis and had greater physical impairments and worse fatigue within 3 years of diagnosis were at a higher risk of having consistently low physical HRQOL compared with any of the other 4 groups in final statistical analyses. Specifically, the median age of those in the lowest HRQOL group was 46 at diagnosis, compared to 38 in those with the best HRQOL trajectory. Those patients also tended to have moderate gait disability and fatigue, compared with normal physical function and minimal fatigue in the highest HRQ-OL group. Both physical impairments and fatigue are responsive to disease-modifying MS therapies, emphasizing the need for early intervention of treatments among those with these risk factors, the researchers wrote. For mental HRQ-OL, four distinct trajectories were identified. Those were chronically low HRQ-OL, 18.6%, moderately low, 32.9%, moderately low in the first 10 years, followed by normal HRQ-OL thereafter, 22.2%, and normal mental HRQ-OL, 26.4%. In final statistical analyses, having an annual income of $50,000 or less, or no post-secondary education, were most strongly associated with increased odds of having chronically low mental HRQ-OL compared with any of the other three groups. Overall, 62% of those with chronically low HRQ-OL made $50,000 or less, compared with 44% of those with normal HRQ-OL. Similarly, 38% in the lowest group lacked post-secondary education, compared with 22% in the high group. Interventions that target social determinants of mental health, such as income supplements, tax credits, and green spaces around homes and workspaces, have all been shown to improve mental well-being and could be effective for MS patients, the team noted. The study overall identifies measurable factors at MS diagnosis that can influence the trajectory of a patient's physical and mental HRQ-OL. There are early risk factors for membership in the groups with the worst HRQ-OL that are easily identifiable by clinicians, providing an opportunity for early interventions, the researchers wrote. This news article was written by Lindsay Shapiro, Ph.D., on August 17, 2022. Click the link in the description below to read more on this and other topics of interest on the MS News Today's website. Chairborne, a column by Benjamin Hoffmeister, published on August 18, 2022. My MS makes getting sick with a viral infection 10 times worse. School started last week for our three kids. They got to see friends from the last school year, meet their new teachers, and sit at a new desk in their new classrooms. Per tradition, there was no homework assigned the first week, but they still brought home plenty of papers for us to sign and return. Also, per tradition, they brought home a lovely upper respiratory virus. Starting last Thursday evening, it made its rounds through our family of five, hitting me sometime Saturday night. As far as illnesses go, it's been fairly mild, and everybody seems to have weathered it well and shaken it in about 24 hours. Everybody but me, that is, because multiple sclerosis just can't seem to leave well enough alone. Sometime late Saturday night, I woke up with a chill, wrapped myself tightly in bed covers, and drifted into a dream. I don't really have lucid dreams, where I'm in control of the action, but I'm often aware that I'm dreaming. At one point in my dream, I was having a bit of a foggy, uncoordinated moment and told myself, "You're acting like you do when you have a fever." Turns out my subconscious is pretty smart. I awoke Sunday morning with a low-grade fever, which in my pre-MS life, I may not have even bothered taking anything for. Unfortunately, with MS and with Uthoff syndrome that often accompanies it, even a half-degree rise in body temperature demands my undivided attention. It's as though multiple sclerosis is a magnifying glass for illness. Spasticity, previously under control, returns to what feels like pre-baclofen pump levels. Legs are stiffened out straight, arms feel like they're moving in jello, and hands feel like someone is curling all of the fingers while holding the fists tightly closed. Diplopia, or double vision, is constant, rather than occurring only with fatigue. Speaking of which, MS fatigue and its companion, brain fog, which are normally difficult to describe, seem to be made 10 times worse by a febrile illness. Multiple sclerosis makes a mockery of spontaneity in everyday life, but it eliminates any hope of sickness spontaneity. I may have just invented a new term. By that I mean that in the years before MS, I would have awakened sick and perhaps decided to stay in bed, but still would have staggered to the medicine cabinet, the bathroom, or the kitchen as needed. I would have reacted to the symptoms on my own timeline, instead of being forced by MS to act with an immediacy bordering on foresight. Once the fever is under control, I'm functional but exhausted, so barely functional. Even in this improved state, I doubt I could manage without help. if I didn't have my wife to take care of me. The only way I could conceivably take care of myself would be to somehow see an illness coming and pre-stage all my needs, or keep an emergency supply by the bed. Not exactly spontaneous. I know it sounds like I'm complaining, and I am, but this isn't the hemfluenza, the bronchitis, or even the dudonic plague. I don't have a clever MS-specific name for this yet. If you do, please share it in the comments. The cruel synergy between MS and being sick may not have an official or unofficial name, but those of us who experience it know it well and have every right to complain. To read more columns by Benjamin Hoffmeister and our other contributors, visit our website at multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com. Follow the link in the description below. This is MS News Today's audio news. Subscribe to our channel to never miss an episode. And if you're listening on Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcasts, hit save. Thanks for tuning in.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to Multiple Sclerosis News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com. And be sure to follow us on social media and join our Multiple Sclerosis News Today forums, a trusted MS community ready to welcome you anytime.